Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, June 25th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice at the website, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships, to manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been gifted. You can also click on a link, download the PDF of the actual tool itself, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and those audio files can serve as a tutorial, and repetition of listening to those and applying the tool in your own life can result in you becoming very proficient at the use of this tool and ways to have it improve your quality of life. So we encourage people to do that soon and often, and because it will improve the quality of their lives and relationships, and because it might spark questions and comments. And if that happens and you want to give us a call, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Alternatively, if you're listening through the archives and you have a question or a comment, you can email us. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at W-H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org. And you can email me at T-J-H at mindshifters-academy.org. Also, this year we've decided to work through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. And today is the 176th day of the year. We are still in a review, and today's lesson reads, The Creator is but love, and therefore so am I. Review of lesson 161 is, Give me your blessing, Holy Son of God. And 162 is, I am as God created me. The Creator is but love, and therefore so am I. Also, we're working through Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment. And her lesson 176 is titled, Thank You for Sharing. Now, go sit in the corner. She quotes Milan Kundera as saying, when the heart speaks, the mind finds it indecent to object. Pam writes, the dude is love, and therefore so am I. Give me your blessing, my holy bro, and I am as the dude created me. My ego wants to control the show, but it has old recipes, old solutions. It's like a cerebral copy machine, Xeroxing the past, perpetuating problems. Conversely, when my life is choreographed by love, I connect to the greater dimensions of my heart. So, say thank you, ego, for your 2 cents, but my yellow highlighter is now underlining notes from the infinitely expanding universe. So, that's our lesson for today. It's a review of lessons 161 and 162. Give me your blessing, Holy Son of God, and I am as God created me. So we have 51 or 52 minutes to discuss. Any comments or questions you have? Any suggestions for topics? I am pleased to announce that we had another support group last night, and we didn't listen to or watch any videos of any so-called experts or spiritual teachers. We simply had discussion, and members do worksheets. And that's available to access absolutely free either Tuesday night or Thursday night, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And all the information you need to join us or pass it along to somebody you think might be interested is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And we'd be grateful if you would either join us or pass it along to somebody you think might be interested. Tremendous amount of value comes from the sense of community and from support in using these very effective tools that, as I mentioned in the intro, I've been using for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and my relationships. And unless you are completely satisfied with the quality of your life and your relationships, you might find it of value to join us and or pass it along to somebody you think could. Because the dynamics that we carry within us that we're not aware of, whenever they get resonated into activity, whenever there's enough energy added to them that they become the strongest resonant frequency in our system, they drive our behaviors. They choose the filters through which we construct our experience of life. So we are always creating our experience of life. The only choice we have in the matter is, will we be conscious about that process? Will we choose to be proactive, consciously constructing our experience of life? Or will we do what most humans have done for thousands of years, and that is remain unconscious about that process and unconscious about how we are creating our experience of life? We are suggesting, most of us who teach this work, most of us who have used the tools and benefited from them, we suggest that it is highly preferable to be active in the conscious co-creative process and to be able to dismantle the negative beliefs from our previous life experiences, which if they're left untreated or unconscious, they direct our experience. They craft our lives. They drive us to have certain emotional experiences, certain beliefs and thoughts, and then from those derive certain actions that most of the time are not productive. They're counterproductive. And if you can discover, if you're like most of us, if you can discover the negative beliefs about yourself, about your life, about, you know, your role as creator or victim, you can craft an entirely different life experience than anything you've had before. More preferable, more joyful, more constructive, and that's why we recommend these tools and support people in using them and growing in their expertise with using them. I've had a number of people over the years that marvel at how I handle certain stressful situations. And that number of people who seem to think that I have so much on the ball or I'm so special has been growing exponentially since I've been actively using these tools. And I've cited a number of examples over the years in this show when I'm reporting on reality management worksheets that I've done on myself about how in years past, 5, 10, or 15 years ago, my response would have been dramatically different. I understand that the use of these tools is making a significantly positive change in my life. And that's why I donate so much of my time, intelligence, money, and energy to teaching people, helping build awareness of and build skill in the application of these tools. Because I know if it's benefited me as much as it has, it can probably benefit anyone who chooses to pick up the tools. Sometimes people say, because we talk about how the use of the tool helps me create a different life experience. So sometimes people say, oh, so, you know, if I use these tools, I'm not going to have any problems in my life. Is that what you're telling me? And I say, no, that's not it at all. As a matter of fact, as past internet shows and discussions with people in the groups have pointed out, I've experienced a lot of things in the last 17 years that I wouldn't wish on an enemy. Very difficult situations for me, losses in relationship, job stresses, financial stress, physical illness. I've experienced tremendous amount of things in the past 17 years that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. What I say about the use of the tools is that my experience of life has improved dramatically with the use of these tools, even though there have been numerous life experiences that have been unpleasant, deeply challenging, etc. And I say to people on a regular basis when we discuss these things, I can't even imagine having to go through these challenging life experiences and these losses without the use of these tools. I can imagine that I would have had to give up my sense of self, my values and priorities, my preferred way to treat people lovingly and with respect if I had not had these tools. Because I probably would have been overcome by the negative emotional states. I probably would have been stuck in the pattern of blaming and victimhood. And with these tools and their active use, that isn't the case. I am moving progressively in my life with practice toward that state, that goal of 100% responsibility for every emotion I experience. And if any of that sounds interesting or impossible or ridiculous to you and you want to make a comment about it, give us a call, 563-999-3581. Or maybe you've got a comment or a question about the show that we had yesterday where even though we had some technical difficulties and interruptions, we read the piece, The Obliterated Place, from Dear Sugar, from that column. There is the possibility to ask a question about that or basically anything we've talked about in the past 10 years on this show. It's over 10 years now. I have, I continue to gain benefit from the reading of In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, a book by Gabor Maté, or Maté, the physician who specializes in trauma work and addictions work. And while it's a long book and lots of stories that may not be interesting to or palatable to a lot of people, there are chapters in that book that talk about brain development and addiction and the brain development in the human that are highly recommended for anybody who wants to do self-improvement or wants to break a cycle of addiction or wants to get a deeper understanding of how these tools that we're offering at whyagain.org actually work. So I also, I should mention that we had people in the group last night who didn't have access to the five-step short version, the mental short version of the Reality Management Worksheet, and that worksheet and the forgiveness pattern that we use in the support groups that so many people find as a powerful supplement or add-on to the Reality Management Worksheet, these are available absolutely free at mindshiftersacademy.org on the educational materials page. And it's just a PDF. There's no need to log in and give an email or sign anything for newsletters to come flooding in your mailbox. Just click, download, and use it. The power of the tool, we had somebody last night who was commenting that she felt jealous because one of the people that did the worksheet out loud in the group had such a quick flash of insight to a younger time in his life and had such a powerful shift. And this other group member doesn't usually have that experience. And she was saying that she's feeling jealous. And I wanted to point out in the group last night, I did point out, and I will point out today, that is a relatively rare experience to have such a deep, powerful shift and insight. And yet, every time I do a worksheet, I'm basically building the foundation and or paving the way for the next time I have one of those breakthrough worksheets. So I find them all valuable, every worksheet. I find it's part of the process. And one of the things, one of the ways I talk about it is that every time I pick up a worksheet and do it, I'm doing a behavior. And I'm doing a behavior that demonstrates to the fearful part of my mind that I actually want to know its contents. I actually believe enough to take an action on it that whatever is in that part of my mind is safe for me to know and would be good for me to know. Now, when I begin this process, I might have had decades of turning away from, running away from in fear, the content of my mind related to some past trauma or some bullying in school or some sense of inadequacy with failure to connect with a loved one or a parent or whatever. And I might have been for decades in my life turning away from it every time it bubbled up near the surface or got resonated. And I might have been responding to that part of my mind, the fearful part of my mind that's been labeling it as too much, too painful, too scary, too rage-inducing, etc. So when I finally reach a point in my life where I say, you know what, I'm going to do some inner work, I'm going to get past this, I'm going to resolve this issue, I may be talking to a fearful part of my mind that has watched me run away from this material for decades. And so that fearful part of my mind may not believe that I really want to know, or that I've changed enough things and that I have enough support in my life right now so that I'm capable of seeing the content of that fearful part of my mind. So it might take me a while. And that may be part of why I might need to do 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 worksheets that don't seem to go anywhere, that don't give me any deep insight. I don't get any big ahas from. They don't connect directly to a childhood trauma. And yet, every time I do a worksheet, even if I only get a slight shift in perception or a slight shift in the intensity of the emotion, or maybe I even shift from one negative emotion to another negative emotion, or the same negative emotion that gets even more intense. Even when that happens, my willingness to do another worksheet is critical, because that's the behavior that matches my words. That's the behavior that demonstrates to the fearful part of my mind that I'm actually willing, and I'm convinced that I am able to survive seeing what I've been running from, sometimes for decades. So we just have to encourage people to keep doing the tools, keep using the tools and doing the process, and avoid the trap of expecting that I'm going to get a certain result with this worksheet. Be willing, just like in any meditation, be willing to accept whatever happens when you sit down to meditate. Understand that it's completely counterproductive to sit down and meditate and then beat myself up because my thoughts don't go where I want them to, or I can't shut my thoughts off, or I can't make my mind blank, etc. Same thing with the worksheet process. I want to use the worksheet process and gratefully accept whatever the result is, even if it seems that I just went blank. Even if I think my conscious logical mind or my ego says, well, this didn't work, or I didn't get anything from this, or I'm still angry, I want to engage the process. If for no other reason than to be taking an action that will demonstrate to that fearful part of my mind that I'm willing to see its content, that I understand that there is, as Guy Finley talks about, there is no such thing as bad self-knowledge, that it is not possible for me to uncover a bad fact about myself, because what I'm going to uncover in my consciousness is simply what I've already lived through. And since I've lived through it, I've survived it. And often I've done a lot more than just survive it. I've lived through it. I've thought about it. I've judged it. I've labeled it. And then I've hidden it away from myself. And that is, in my humble opinion, thoroughly handling the situation. And so any part of my mind that's fearful that says, Tim, you can't handle this, is operating from a false conclusion. You've already handled everything you've lived through. You've already survived it. You've already used coping mechanisms to get through it. And if it's not readily available for your conscious awareness, it means you're actively hiding it from yourself. So you are, no matter how anxiety-ridden you might be, no matter how fearful you might be at a conscious level, you are handling your life. You are coping with it, dealing with it, and in many cases, thriving in ways your conscious logical mind or your ego might try to convince you you're not. And to get more in that active, conscious, co-creative status, we have the tools. And the more you learn how to use those tools, the more you feel this adept set of, you're feeling more adept at applying them. Our experience, most of us who use these tools on a regular basis, is the better your life will get. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We have 31 or 2 minutes left. This is a Friday. We have the big weekend coming. So how can we support you? What's a comment? What's a question? What would be a useful way to spend the next 25 or 30 minutes on this internet extravaganza? Area code 828, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is Magda.
Hello, Magda. I thought that might be your number. How are you?
I'm doing very well, except for what you've just been talking about. And I need some ideas, some help, some direction. I've talked to you about this before. My dependence on sugar, especially, and food in general. One would think that I'm 340 pounds, but actually I'm rather small, and yet I still use food to distract myself when I have fear come up about not knowing how to proceed. And what I'm wondering about is, what can I do right at that moment? You know, instead of reaching for a cigarette or a drink or whatever, I reach for food. And I can be very much aware, I am aware that that is happening, and yet I feel totally compulsive about reaching for it anyway. And I just don't know how to interrupt that behavior so that I can actually go do a worksheet instead and clear whatever it is my fear is about. Do you have any ideas?
Well, the first thing that I would recommend is the understanding that that compulsion, just like any other compulsion, is driven by a desire to numb out from or avoid pain.
Right.
And so if the first step for most of us is to just recognize that rather than allow the conscious logical mind to say, well, I just need this because my blood sugar is low, or I just need this because X, Y, or Z. And to start the inner dialogue that recognizes, oh, I have a pain. I may not even be consciously aware of the pain, but if I have an urge for my drug of choice or my distracting behavior of choice, that is a very clear indication that some part of my consciousness has just tapped into pain and it's resonating stronger. It may soon reach the conscious level, and it might be completely at the unconscious level, but I'm aware of this urge to reach for my drug of choice. You know, for some people it's chocolate-covered raisins, for other people it's donuts, for other people it's cocaine, crystal meth, you know, orgasm, the shopping cure. So the first step that I recommend is that we train ourselves to recognize, oh, this is a sign of pain. This is not an indication for a new pair of shoes. You know, let's say that shopping is my activity of choice to distract me from my pain. Or maybe you're a Gabor Mate and you have an addiction to purchasing classical music CDs. And that urge to purchase a classical music CD is registering in his mind as a craving for music.
Mm-hmm.
But the essence of it is, the first step is to rewire my brain to understand, oh, this is a message that I'm in pain.
Okay.
The next thing is, how do I soothe myself in a way that is not when I have that pain? Do I do EFT tapping? Do I do breath work? Do I do a yoga pose? Do I invite that painful conscious part of my mind to reveal itself as I pick up a pen and I'm ready to take notes about, you know, what's causing the pain? And then, of course, all of the above tools, right? I might do a mind shifter on how it's safe and healing for me to avoid using my drug of choice when the craving hits. Or it's safe and healing for me to be consciously aware of all of the dynamics that drive my craving.
What if the... It sounds to me like it would be important to work on the rewiring of my brain around this issue when I'm not in the mode of craving. When I'm not in that automatic response.
Yeah, that's why Michael has tools like, you know, the word links tools and the worksheet and the targeted journaling. The idea is to do the exploration.
Mm-hmm.
From a voluntary basis, right, before I'm so triggered that I can't see straight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you think in terms of the energy system, you know, I used to teach the EFT tapping all-day class, and on a regular basis we would, most of those classes, I spent an afternoon segment talking about addiction. And I have these foods, and they're not really foods, these drugs of choice. Regular chips, cheesy chips, chocolate cake, dark chocolate, mm-hmm. light chocolate, you know, sugary sweet treat, salty treat chips. And I would lay them out on the table after the break, the first break after lunch. So now these people have been there since like 8 or 8:30 in the morning. They've had a lunch break. They're tired of, you know, the tall, bald guy telling them how to tap on their face and foreheads and fingertips. And they want to go home, and they just want their continuing education unit's piece of paper, and they're getting frustrated. And we ask them to come to the table and pick a piece of this substance that they're craving. And just smell it, don't taste it, don't eat it, just, and go back to their place and wait. And then we have them rate how strongly their craving is for this substance. And then we do a few rounds of tapping where all we're focusing on is the craving sensation.
Okay.
And on a regular basis, people report anger at me because they think I've now ruined chocolate for them, or I've ruined chips, or I've ruined their favorite diet drink, Tab or whatever. Because after a few rounds of tapping, when they smell or taste that thing that they were craving, it tastes rancid, or it tastes purely like chemicals or metallic, and they have no desire for it whatsoever. And I avoid full frontal attack by some of those people by calmly reassuring them that it's going to be okay, because the next time their issues get triggered, the craving is going to come up, and if they don't do the tapping, they just go to their drug of choice, it's going to seem as wonderful as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only thing that makes it seem so good is that their body-mind unit knows this substance will numb them to the pain.
Yeah.
But I've literally had people they bring their own chips, their favorite chips, and they open the bag and they smell it, and oh, it smells so good, and they can't wait to have a bite of their chip. And we say, well, don't do that yet. Do one or two or three rounds of tapping, and now smell the chips and get ready to see if you want to taste it. On a number of occasions, people have reported, oh, my God, this smells rancid. Where 5 minutes before, it smelled like heaven, and they couldn't
mm-hmm.
wait to put it in their mouth. But when they do the tapping on the craving, and they let the energy flow move through them, and they dissipate the dynamic that's creating the pain, all of a sudden their perception shifts dramatically.
Can you say that last sentence again? My brain went somewhere else.
If they are ready, if they are willing to refuse to act on the craving and do a few rounds of tapping, which basically just means letting themselves sit with the energy, let it flow through them rather than resist it, let things bubble up.
Okay.
It shifts their perception dramatically.
Okay.
And then they are able to perceive more accurately. Why do I say more accurately? Because there's nothing of nutritional substance in these salty chips that come out of a bag that were fried, you know, weeks or months ago in some oil that, you know, maybe has been used 18 times.
Yeah.
There is no nutritional value in the sugar-coated white flour that's in the donut that they're craving. So the accurate perception is a healthy body doesn't want that white flour sugar concoction dumped in it, because it's empty calories that it's going to have to detox from. A healthy body energy system doesn't want something that was deep fried in a rancid oil and, you know, that's got some special combination of sugar, fat, and salt to make their brains go bonkers
mm-hmm.
in this craving response, in this stimulated pleasure response. So I say that they will perceive more accurately because the pain is no longer in the way, and the pain is no longer driving the perception.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm guessing that over time, if I was to utilize this tool, for instance, in the way that you've just described, that the craving would possibly stop, or I would have an automatic awareness that it is that I'm just giving into my addiction.
Yeah, well, in a sense, it, all of those things happen. So, number one, if I train my mind to accurately perceive, oh, this is pain.
Yeah.
Right. This is. This thing that's in me right now that's driving me to want to reach for my drug of choice, whether it's chocolate-covered raisins or salty chips or, you know, a hit of vodka or whatever, is not the absence of that substance that my body is craving. It's not, it's not that I need joy and this is the only way to get it. I train my mind to observe, oh, I'm in pain. There's a tension. There's a fear. There's a frustration. And I wasn't consciously aware of it, but I am consciously aware of the craving. And because I've learned that how this system works, now I know I could either use this behavior or drug of choice to numb myself out from the pain and satisfy the craving. Or I could choose to explore what is the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And if I choose to face the pain head on and use the tools to dismantle it, there is no desire in me for the substance, for the drug of choice. And Michael Rice has talked about this extensively over the years, that he's worked with people who are addicts, and if they are willing to use the tools, if they are willing to proactively go into their mind-body-energy system, identify their traumas and their pains and their false negative beliefs and dismantle them, their craving for the substance just falls away.
Yes, and I've experienced that. And I have forgotten that I experienced that, very conveniently forgotten. So this gives me a nice framework within which to pursue remembering and using it and restructuring my thoughts about what the signal of the demanding drug of choice is, the craving. Cool.
So that's the first thing, to rewire my brain to interpret the craving signal differently, right?
Yes.
And to have it alert me to the fact that, oh, I'm in pain. And often in this kind of a process, it's an unconscious pain.
Yes.
The next thing is to actively use the tools to identify and then dismantle the trauma energy that I'm carrying around, or, you know, in the false beliefs about myself that I'm carrying around. Negative core beliefs is, they used to talk to us about it in graduate school. These are my core issues. Michael Rice would call them my 77 times 70 worksheet issues. Diedrich Wolsack would call it my, you know, core beliefs, negative beliefs about myself. And when I identify them and dismantle them, there's less of them there to get triggered. So then I'm making, you know, fundamental changes in my mind-body-energy system, in my belief system. And that's what's going to drive these things that we generate that we call perceptions. That's what drives my experience of my life. So again, as Michael Rice, if he were doing an intensive, he would say all of the above.
All of the above, yeah.
Use all of the tools to begin to identify the ways that you're holding on to false beliefs about yourself. How do you know if they're false? They're negative, or they result in you experiencing a negative emotion. So you use the tools to identify those false beliefs about yourself, and then use those tools to dismantle the energies that were either downloaded at the time that those beliefs came to you, and or the energies that keep getting generated every time you pour mind energy into those false beliefs. And the more you dismantle that energy, the more you clean up your system, the more you get that easy, direct access to your true nature, the experience of yourself as the energy of creation expressing in form. or as Michael Rice would say, a true human life, right? The essence of the newborn that is in every adult has never been diminished, chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. It can be covered up. I can be distracted from it, but it's never left me. And it's accessible once I clear enough garbage out of the way.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a number three? Sounds like one and two are, step one and two are sufficient.
Well, it's like they say on almost every shampoo bottle, I'm told. I'm certain they still say this, although I haven't used a shampoo bottle in decades. But the shampoo bottles used to say, lather, rinse, and repeat.
Yes.
And that is great spiritual training right there.
Got it. Yeah, got it. Okay, this is substantial, helpful information, Dr. Kim. Thank you.
The other thing to watch for, if there is a step three that just came to mind, would be watch for any tendency to beat yourself up because you're not doing it fast enough or good enough or as well as somebody else, and dismantle that false belief as well. Be gentle with yourself and dismantle the false belief that says you should be doing it better or you should have mastered your craving for sugar already, or there's something wrong with you because these tools are so powerful and effective, but they're not working for you. Just catch those negative judgments of self and turn the tools on them as well. That would be step three.
That's great. That's great. Okay, wow. We have a few more minutes.
So you have another question?
I do. So yesterday I was stopping. I was in a grocery store, and there was a woman picking out some vegetables, and she was staying in the same spot for quite a long time. I wasn't watching what she was doing, just that she was there quite a long time. And I needed something that was on the shelf next to what she was looking at, and a bit higher up. And so I reached up to get it. And I don't know how close I got to her because I was looking at what I was going to grasp. And she turned to me and said, I wish you wouldn't get so close to my face when you're reaching for blah, blah, blah. And I immediately apologized. I wasn't aware that I was that close. Excuse me. And I thought, oh, okay, that's it. She was a bit rude, I thought. She could have said that in a better way. And then as I proceeded to go through my day, it kept coming back. That memory kept coming back to me. And I think the bottom line is I was a naughty girl. I did something wrong. I should have, blah, blah. Whatever that is, I should have done better. So I realize I have some work to do on this. And I knew that when I was out shopping. And when I got home, I told Chuck, well, I've got to do a worksheet because, well, you know, and I was telling him what happened. And I didn't do a worksheet. So talk about resistance.
Talking about being a naughty girl.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Well, that was a good catch. Yeah. I was very naughty. I was supposed to do some homework, and I didn't. Oh, my gosh. Well, so I don't even know how to approach that in a mind shift or a worksheet. I'm just like, oh, I don't know what to do. It's so much easier when I listen to other people and I can help recommend something for them.
Well, the other thing is that you might want to, you know, do a worksheet not on you being a naughty girl, but on you judging this other person as being wrong for overreacting.
Yeah.
Okay. Because when you do that worksheet with the eye towards, when in the recent or distant past have you been harsh to somebody who didn't deserve it? Then
okay.
You'll have some really juicy material.
I see where you're going.
Is it possible that you've ever snapped at somebody who didn't deserve it?
I doubt it very much because I am such a good girl.
There you go. And
okay, so she was.
Yeah, we have this bottom line observations list that says, I'll never be upset. One of them is I'll never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think
mm-hmm.
they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar
mm-hmm.
thing. Now, the dynamic that's in that bottom line observation is exactly the same dynamic that Michael Rice has in his codependence to interdependence worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I say, my advice for this person is that she should be more gentle and kind and not overreact. Well, that's perfect advice for me. It might be good for her, but it's perfect advice for me. So if I use that with the reality management worksheet, I could say, okay, what's the behavior or trait that this person is displaying? Well, she's being rude. She's, you know, rushing to judgment, and she's judging harshly, and she's, you know, scolding somebody who doesn't deserve it. Okay. And let's say that the word scolding resonates the strong emotion for me. Or let's say the thought about being harsh with somebody who doesn't deserve it resonates the stronger emotion for me. Whichever it is, then I take a breath and turn inside and ask myself, when in the recent or distant past have I done that, exhibited that behavior, or treated somebody that way that I'm still judging myself negatively for? Most of the time, something will come to mind. And then
mm-hmm.
I can do my worksheet on that, or I can do my EFT tapping and breath work on that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realize that, oh, I was doing that, I was snapping at people, I was judging them harshly because I was completely at my wit's end, I was overwhelmed with work stress or family stress, or I was struggling with my own anxiety or whatever, then I forgive myself. In other words, I dismantle the negative beliefs about myself, what a horrible person I was, because I see it in context. Oh, I was only 12 years old. I was completely overwhelmed. I didn't have any other coping mechanisms. I learned this from my mother, whatever it is, and I have compassion for my 12-year-old self. Then when I take a breath or two and I've dismantled those negative judgments against myself and I look at the person in my life today that I thought I was upset with, I look at them through the lens of compassion. And I think,
mm-hmm.
oh, they must be going through rough times. Oh, bless their hearts. They need, you know, Pierre Pradervan's gentle art of blessing, loving energy sent their way. And
mm-hmm.
then I have compassion. And when I've got compassion for myself at a younger age and compassion for that person, that's when I realize I've cleared some energy around that issue.
Great. Perfect. Yeah, that's great. I don't think I would have ever picked up on that. Again, you know, just being very resistant to knowing the truth. It's kind of interesting because Chuck and I did a...
Hold on a minute. Can you speak a little bit more clearly or loudly into your phone?
Let's try this. Is that better?
Well, it's still kind of soft. I've turned my volume up, but try again.
Okay. Okay, how's this?
That's enough. I can hear you. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Chuck and I recently did a responsibility communication with Michael Rice and the entire group on the video call. And it was incredibly good for me. And it was also very hard because I thought that I knew how to do it correctly. And I made lots and lots of projections and assumptions and all kinds of things. And so I was corrected, and that's really what happened yesterday. I was corrected. Okay. Interestingly, it was very powerful for me, and I have been reluctant to do any personal work since that time. And that's at least a month, maybe even longer, since then. So,
since that responsibility communication video?
Yes. Yes. Did you see it?
Well, if you only did one, I saw it. If you did one after the first one, I didn't see that.
We did a follow-up, and that was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so it wasn't an actual responsibility communication, but talking about the experience a little bit with me, and then Michael had a lot to say. So
what you just tapped into was a lot of strong emotion around having been corrected.
Yes.
And
yes,
what
indeed.
What you said was that since that responsibility communication video that you and Chuck were so gracious to gift the community, you have not been feeling capable of doing your own personal work.
Capable. Interesting word, because I haven't experienced it that way. It's more like I just don't want to. I have no interest in it. And yet, I think I should, but it would be good to do. So, capable is an interesting thought. Because
okay.
That's what I really thought about.
So change the word or the wording from capable to I haven't been able to bring myself to do it even though I think I should.
Yes. But I really think you hit on it, Dr. Tim. Capable, I think, was the right word, because I have not felt, or I have not, like I just asked you, how would I handle this thing that happened yesterday at the store? I didn't feel capable of knowing how to handle it. And something else we talked about.
Okay, so you had this belief, and this is part of what you already said. You had a belief that you were really good at this responsibility communication tool.
Yes.
And your experience was that you got corrected a lot and that you weren't doing it well at all.
Right.
And your reaction to what you believe is being corrected is to feel incompetent to do your own work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so you might benefit from a mind shifter that says something like, it's safe and healing for me, and I love it when people question my judgment or what I think I know to be true.
Whoa, that's bringing up a lot of emotion. Whoa. Okay, I better write that one down. It's safe and healing for me.
And I love it when people question my judgment and what I believe to be true.
When people question my judgment
and what I believe to be true.
about what I believe to be true. See, I have tears on the verge of being out on my face. Oh, yeah, I think you've got a good one here.
So keep your breath moving. And if Michael were here, he'd say that would be with the first stuff you'd write on the right side of the page, that I have tears moving. That's a good one,
yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah.
So we are at the time of transitioning. So
okay.
I will ask you to hold on a minute while we make the transition, and I'm sure Michael and Jeannie would be willing to help you keep processing. I will mute you, and you might want to press 1 on your phone again, so put your hand down, and then if you want to keep talking with Jeannie, she can see you press 1 again.
Thank you. Thank
well, thank you,
you
so much for calling, and thanks for your questions. Blessings.
Absolutely. Bless you.
I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Excellent conversation. And, yes, we would love to keep going with that, Magda. That's awesome.
Well, have a great show and a great weekend.
Oh, you too. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, June the 25th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581 and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll welcome Michael, and I will tell you that Magda is still with us and she has her hand still up. So you want to go directly to processing with her?
Sweet. Let's say hello to the young lady.
Absolutely. Hey, Magda.
Hey. How are you doing, Jeannie, Michael?
We're
doing
rocking,
good.
Doing well.
This
How about you?
This is awesome.
Jeannie was just sharing a little bit about your conversation with Tim. I wasn't on, but sweet, next layer, next level of healing. Thank you, Dr. Tim.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Tim, for sure. Yeah, right now I'm pretty full of emotion. He gave me a really good, a number of great ideas, and the last one was a mind shifter that I think it would be good if I would do it right now while I have all of this emotion happening.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah.
So we'll be breathing with you.
Yeah.
And if it moves and you want to, you know, come back in, that would be awesome.
I will keep that as a possibility. Thank you.
Let's leave it right at that and we'll talk later.
Okay. Good. And
I've got another mind shifter I'll send you. I'll text to you.
Oh, okay.
we'll support your process thing right where it is, the level where Jim took you to, and hold the space.
Okay. Very good.
Sweet.
So have a wonderful show. And,
all right. In the plan. Okay.
Talk with you later.
Sending love. All right, so that's the only hand we have up, so take it away.
Sending love, yes. So welcome, everybody. Once again, we get to play in this awesome arena of first century Aramaic forgiveness. We get to move into deeper and deeper levels and layers of what it takes to heal. You know, if you've ever been asked if you know what a whatchamacallit is, what would you say? Well, what are you talking about? If I said to you, what can you tell me about a truck? You'd tell me four wheels, or 18 wheels, or whatever you would tell me. because your brain cells for it. But I've asked you what a whatchamacallit was. You wouldn't tell me anything about it because you don't have brain cells for what a whatchamacallit is. And one of the important parts of this process that we're going through is building the brain cells for the process of healing. Because right now, for most people, healing is a whatchamacallit. Like, what does that look like? Oh, I feel terrible. Great. I'm delighted you're healing. What do you mean you're delighted I'm healing? Well, a moment ago, you were in great spirits and something resonated. Up it came, and here's your layer to process through it. Oh, I didn't have brain cells for that. That's not what that meant to me. That meant, oh, my goodness, I'm in trouble. But, you know, each time you choose to embody at a new depth a truth that your mind has not yet engaged, all of the lies have to go. That's just part of the process. Everything that is not true, everything that does not fit, called the learning process. Well, I should talk about learning in a later chapter in the book. But once you've got the brain cells to go, oh, this is what my healing process looks like, then instead of confusion, pain, depression, anger, sadness, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, trauma, processing old unresolved pain, you get, from an unconscious point of view, you get to go to a conscious point of view and process that old pain. And processing, remember, we define this work as holding love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. Guess what that requires? That which is less than love has to come up. So when I recognize, when I have the brain cells to recognize, oh, this is my healing process, then I continue to take the tools. Whatever lie my mind's telling me, my mind can tell me I'm not capable, I'm not competent, I'm broken, or, you know, and all that the mind is doing is replaying power person messages that simply need to be resolved. And so, Magda, with this kind of an issue, it would be perfect to put on the new power person worksheet from the codependence intensive and take a look at the next level. And remember, we talked a lot in the intensive about, and of course we've done this on the show over the years, about becoming the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions. Step back and be able to observe this automatic decision system kicking into old judgments about self and others, and then being able to call foul on those old judgments of self and others. Apply the tool of forgiveness and throw them out, because they have no place in you. It's all based in lies. And if you think about that passage from the Course in Miracles we've talked about many times, that says, you use the words that the world of darkness rules, but not because you believe in them, only to declare their unreality in terms that still have meaning in that world that darkness rules. And so as you have the brain cells for, oh, here's the next piece of my, oh, here's the next piece. What's the next piece going to look like? It's going to look like anything that holds me out of functioning fully in enthusiasm and aliveness and joy and in the presence of love. Now, of course, it's usually going to be somebody else that resonates those brain cells. And that's when people want to run away, disconnect. I don't want anything to do with you. What's going on in you that you turn to run? Most people ask the question or tell the story. Remember, Satan in Aramaic means the resister, one who misleads. You invite the average person who's going into a healing crisis to recognize there's been a healing crisis, and this is energy moving, and they'll go into their resistance. No, 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 you don't understand. What I have brain cells for is they're the problem in my life. And if I can just get far enough away from them, if I can just manipulate them enough, if I can just tell them what they should really be doing. Now, remember, every time you're telling somebody else what they should really be doing, not giving them support, but advise them as to what they should be doing. You are giving advice to yourself, and you are engaging in your own power person dynamic unconsciously. And if you don't have the brain cells for that, you can't tell. You can't see it. It's transparent. The mind doesn't show it. But you can tell when you recognize the emotional contents of your mind, when there's hostility and fear there and judgment and putting somebody else in a position where you determine that they're not worthy of being in relationship. So it's an interesting process to build the brain cells, to be able to recognize this whatchamacallit called a healing process or a healing crisis. I remember on a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. On a mental level, it looks like any kind of confusion you've ever had and negative thoughts. And on a mental level, looks like any, depression. And on an mental level, looks like any kind of negative thought and confusion. So physical, mental, emotional. Old symptoms, low energy. Negative thoughts, confusion. Depression, old negative feelings. That's what processing out what this multi-generational database is holding on to means. And so we're here to create the support and to add to your vitality and your comprehension of those principles so that you can open. You know, in the ancient scriptures, they talked about hear a little, there a little. And it's usually a little piece here and a little piece there until, bang, something major opens, and then you get to do a giant chunk of work. And we're here to support everyone who lends an ear to this in touching into that healing process. Now, some people might say, well, why would I want to face all that stuff and deal with it? Well, here's why. Because whatever you're facing and dealing with that feels quote unquote negative when it comes up, literally in your tissue structure, it's a disorder and a disease. If you don't ever bring it up and out and move it out of the system, then quite literally, it will ultimately be what kills you or contributes to your death. And I'm going to offer that, although everybody's doing it, you know, pretty much everybody we know of, sooner or later dies. Maybe even death is a lie. Maybe if we had the courage to really open this field fully and clean up all of the generational patterns of hostility or fear, we could move out of that state of unconsciousness and into a whole new state of being. And everything we're doing is to move in that direction. If I am totally in error with that, here's what. It will only do you good to engage in it anyway. If death is the truth, then you're going to die anyway. So what's the difference? And maybe, just maybe, in the book of Revelations where Yeshua says, to he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of the second death. They will become a pillar. A pillar obviously is a fixture. It's not going anywhere. You know, driving down around the south, and those big homes with those huge pillars in front, they're not going anywhere. Will become a pillar in the temple of my God. What does the temple of my God mean there? The temple, read your scriptures, says the body is the temple of the Creator. Closer than hands and feet. Yeah, somebody wants to put the Creator off in the sky. Create an instrument and stayed right inside. And we've created a whole perceptual world that tries to separate us from that. Closer than hands and feet. Will not taste of the second death. The first death is when we lose awareness that we are created as love. Will not taste of the second death and shall go out no more. What's being spoken about there? We're going to stop killing ourselves. And I'm offering that all death, there's no such thing as a natural death. All death is suicide. We do it to ourselves when we engage in energy patterns that don't belong within this human system. Now, if you take a moment and go hold the newborn child and tap into the essence of that newborn, you're going to get to experience that newborn energy is pure, present love. And when you understand that that's who you are, is pure, present love, and everything else is a lie, then you get to start undoing the lies. And it's only the lies that kill us. So we're looking to get back to truth, to have the brain cells for truth, and get back to where we're designed to live. In the meantime, we've been reading from the chapter in Why Is This Happening to Me Again on choosing teachers. And if you remember, we were talking to this character, Richard, and I'm using an example of him. He objects. He wants positive thinking only. He doesn't want to hear about any negative consequences to what's going on. And I've used an example of, well, you know, if you were in a prison but you didn't know it, and I were to inform you were in a prison, would that be negative thinking? And if you didn't know that once you got around the third corner, blind corner that you can't see past, that there's a 20-foot fence you're going to have to span, would it be negative thinking to say, by the way, there's going to be a problem, and if you know about that problem, the 20-foot fence, then before you start out on your journey, you can go into that building over there and grab that 25-foot ladder and you'll be over the fence. So he's kind of acting like the person, like, well, don't tell me the facts. Well, we want, you know, this work is not about the disease of premature positive thinking. This work is about being with honest and true thinking and being able to look at what is factual. Rather than construct perceptual realities and believe that they're the truth about the actuality that we're living in. So Richard's resisted that, and I just shared this story about the prison and the fence. And so the next thought that I offer him is showing up at the fence without a ladder is doing life the hard way. I'm here to support you in making life easy and joyful, meeting your challenges with the practical tools and knowledge you need. I support you in meeting obstacles in life with a ladder in hand, that is, living life from an empowered state. Richard says, I'm willing to have that support and have life easier. I'm not just not sure yet about how that fits in with being a positive thinker. I've always been told I should be more positive, and I've been working on that, Richard confided. This work is not about being a positive thinker. That can get you into a lot of trouble, I offered. What are you talking about, Michael? My friend who insists that I call you said the work you've developed is the ultimate in positive thinking. This work is about honest and appropriate thinking, Richard. There's a disorder that I call premature positive thinking. If you have a negative foundation and refuse to deal with it, positive thinking is very appealing. It becomes another way to avoid. There is a benefit to positive thinking. Life improves. And so we'll leave the thought at that. We'll let that thought hang, and we'll step into the next step in that chapter on Monday. And in the meantime, we are honored and delighted to have your ear. And if you're out there in listener land, we would love to hear your voice. What's happening in your world? Do you have any thoughts, questions, answers, ideas for us? What's happening for you? Did Magda's session with Dr. Tim arouse any questions for you, any thoughts? And or are you using the tools? If you're using the tools, can we support you with them? Is there anything that you're working on that's a challenge for you that we can be of support, or any aspect of any of the tools that for some reason are not making sense or you need some support with? Our call-in number, Sean, one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. So if you're out there in this land and you can't talk to us directly because you're listening through one of the other venues that delivers this show, call that number, 563-999-3581. You'll be listening directly to the show. And if you push one, that will raise a hand in the phone queue, and you and Jeannie and I will be having a conversation. So what is on your mind? How can we support you?
There are no hands up and no questions in the chat room. Has anybody else faced a similar situation like Magda, where you didn't feel like you were doing something adequately? Or, you know, I've heard a lot of people that I've worked with, well, I don't know if I'm doing this worksheet right.
Oh, I've heard that many times.
Yeah. I've even myself, and I told this the other day, that I've done worksheets before, and then when I look back and it's like so messy, and I even want to rewrite the worksheet because, you know, I didn't do it right. I wasn't neat enough or whatever. But it's not
honey,
about
you
that.
Have
it's,
rewritten. You have rewritten.
I have.
Worksheet, honey.
I know. I
not
have.
Not you wanted to.
But, you know, it's perfect even if your handwriting's bad, because if you look at it, you know, you can ask yourself, when did I write like that? Or if you're doing a mind shifter, you know, and your handwriting kind of gets crazy in the middle of it or whatever, you can think, when did my handwriting look like that as I was growing up? And that can kind of give you a clue as to when that issue started for you. I have found that to be true anyway. I don't know if that's true in every case, but it has been for me.
I think that the handwriting is something like the personality. It shifts and changes as our energy shifts and changes, as our awareness of what's going on in the mind changes. So, you know, that word persona in the Greek language means mask. And the energetic patterns that happen to be running the system at any given time are either a reflection of the truth of who we are, or they're a mask that we put on over top of who we are. In the Greek language, the word persona literally means mask. So we have people with different personalities. Actually, there's some interesting research that was done by a gentleman who was a medical doctor and was into researching personalities. And he worked with multiple personality disorder. Now, is it a disorder? Well, I don't know. It may not even be a disorder, because in some cases, let's say, for instance, someone's been really horribly abused as a child, one of their personalities or their alter personality, when they shift into it, you know, they were, as a child, they were injured regularly, assaulted in some way. And so they developed a personality to handle that assault. And there are cases where, you know, there have been those proven multiples who, when they're injured, will shift into a personality that accelerates their healing process. So where something might normally take 6 weeks to heal, they may have finished that healing process in 10 days. Is that a disorder? Well, might not be. But there's a particular project that they did with a woman who had diabetes. And, you know, they measure all of her stats, and before she goes in to do this experiment, she's proven to be a multiple. And with multiple personality, you know, persona is an accumulation of thoughts that kind of coagulate into this personality that an individual has. And so oftentimes a personality will be resonating into activity by some sort of stimulus. So let's say if somebody's threatened, they may go from being gentle and mild to becoming just crazy person, wild, abusive. And so this woman is known multiple diabetes. They bring her into the laboratory. They measure all of her stats. And sure enough, you know, if this woman doesn't have insulin every day, she's going to die. And then they induce a personality shift. You do that through resonance. And she shifts into one of her alternate personalities. Now, what I would offer, you know, oftentimes in multiple personality, they say, well, there's this personality in there that's George and Harry and Bill and Mary, and, you know, they're all different people in there. There are no different people in there. There's one being behind this so-called body-mind unit with its multiple personalities, and there are different, what should I say, configurations of mind energy and responses that constitutes each different personality. So when this woman is in the mode, which is her normal persona, she's got diabetes. But then they induce a personality shift, and they run tests. And there is nothing that would indicate diabetes. And if you gave her insulin, it might kill her. Well, how could that be? Isn't diabetes a disorder of the pancreas? Well, that's pretty much the believed issue, but then, let's apply some real science here for a minute. Let's listen to Niels Bohr as he's receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics over 100 years ago. Actually, Jeannie and I were in Denmark a few years back, and went and actually slept in his laboratory where all of his writings were and such. It was pretty cool. Got to nap there. So here's what he said. As a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. So if there is no matter, then there can't be a pancreas. There can't be a disorder of the pancreas. I mean, that's silly. Well, but, you know, we x-rayed it, and there's the pancreas, and it's dysfunctioning, and that's why there's a sugar problem. Okay, if that's true, then why is it when a multiple personality it has a persona shift induced that so-called pancreas functions perfectly, and there is no diabetes? There was no pancreas in the first place. Our eye interprets pancreas, a certain energy pattern, and when the integrative energies are there that produce what we call a functioning pancreas, we say, this one's functioning perfectly. But when a dis-ease energy, an energy that is off the mark, remember the Aramaic word sin is an archery term that simply means off the mark. So if a disintegrative energy enters into what we look at and see as tissue, but is really just energy, then we see it begin to disintegrate. So if you think of persona A, and there are energetic 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And when those 10 patterns are in resonance all at once, we say, well, we call that persona, Jane. And when something comes along and resonates a different pattern, let's say attribute 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20, when those are resonated into activity simultaneously, then we say the pattern changes from the personality Jane to the personality Bill. And we talk to Bill, and Bill has a voice, and Bill talks just like any other person. What if your persona is just a number of points that are resonating in conjunction with each other, and you think that's who you are. And guess what? That's the biggest lie you've ever been told, because that's not who you are. That's the persona active at any given moment that the device has. The woman they did this research on with the pancreas problem and diabetes, when they bring her back to her original personality, she's got full-blown diabetes again. Does she have a pancreas? No, she doesn't have a pancreas. Here's what happens. Mind, you know, if you go to the opening words in the book of John, it says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Our eye looks in a certain frequency range that we call the frequency range of matter and light. And when something is based in that energy range, we don't see it as energy. We don't see it as nested frequencies, as Max Planck said. We see it as real physical, because our eye takes in frequencies of light, misses out on a whole bunch of others, but takes in certain frequencies of light, and the brain generates a perception, a perceptual construct called a pancreas. And we see it. But it isn't there. It is a pattern of nested frequencies that the eye interprets as matter. Matter does not exist. Einstein, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so low as to be perceptible to the senses. Einstein, there is no matter. Now, what is the matter with you? Think about that phrase for a minute. It looks like matter, but in reality, it's mind energy organized into a form. And notice that the forgiveness process works with removing mind energy. And when you remove the mind energy that doesn't belong, remember the word forgive means remove, then you change the state of the appearance totally and completely. When you recognize that, then you realize that if we are fully conscious, then the energy pattern that controls this energy expression called the body-mind unit is a being that is conscious, active, present love, rather than a number of personality points that are resonating together and appear as who this person is. When we choose to take charge of our own energy systems and its nested frequencies, and we are willing to do the work to remove the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, all the appearances. Go back to Yeshua, and he says, do not judge by appearances. When we remove the energetic appearances, then this so-called body-mind unit becomes a place that reflects your state of being rather than the personas that have been implanted or activated in you and or perhaps been there for generations and happened to commit to activity and take over your awareness and your life. It's not until you know the truth that you can possibly be free of that. Once you know the truth of how it works, to he or she that overcomes, they shall not taste of the second death. They will become a pillar in the temple. And you will refuse to engage in disintegrative energy. You will do the work it requires to remove disintegrative energy. And you get to live. Little different idea than the rest of the world has or than most of the world has. But if you go back and check your scriptures in the original Aramaic especially, you'll find it's all there. It says, don't judge by appearances. Don't judge by the way the persona looks and his recognition that we were here to function as love. And we've got to come to bring you life and bring life more abundantly. And look at how many times he talks about love. And unless love is present, you listen to Paul. He's got a really powerful example of that. He talks about if I speak as with the tongues of angels, I'm not sure the exact quote, but have not love, I'm as a tinkling cymbal. He goes through several things. He says, if I have not love. In other words, if human life, love, is not conscious, active, and present in me, then everything I do is empty. And, you know, his metaphor for that is a tinkling cymbal. Am I willing to do the work to face what's gone on in the generations to take me to the point where this is where I live today and to face and remove every bit of disintegrative energy? That's what we're here to support.
We have a hand.
Yep. Oh, great. I've got two of them. Let's talk to this one, though.
Okay, area code 610. I think it's Susan.
Hey, guys.
Well, hey there, young lady. You're on the road.
I am on the road. Charlie and I did listen, but he didn't listen. He did a Sudoku puzzle on his phone instead. So,
that's,
you know,
okay.
I'm
brain cells get built.
Right. Well, he starts conversations with me looking for reassurance in the OCD way. And I don't know
right.
if you know how that works, but I guess you do. It's so much foremost on his mind that we are told, all of us, not to respond, not to comfort him, not to reassure him, because that only fans flames for this OCD monster to keep doing what it's been doing. So he
right.
starts out, and he's very smart. He says, oh, no, this isn't about that. And at first we were hooked, but then not for long, because it is about that. So he goes, I say, Charlie, out of total love for you, I'm not going to answer these questions. I cannot. It would be unloving of me if I did. And he says, but these squirrely, you know, they'll fight me. And then he'll say, oh, okay. Then he goes silent. And I said, I'd love to have a conversation with you about the rest of your life. And he says, there is no rest of my life.
Mm.
That's how hooked he is.
That's what his persona is playing out right now.
That's what, Michael?
That's what his persona is playing out as right now in the context of the conversation we've been having.
Right. So that's a persona.
And
okay.
That's a persona, yeah. And you know, if you listen to that lesson in the course that you've heard me quote fairly often over the years, because it's been one of the most profound and powerful for me, what the Course says is you use the symbols of OCD for a while, not because you believe in them, but to declare the falsity of them in the context of the OCD. So OCD, as we've talked about, you know, it's a series of thought disorders. And when I can prove that this is a thought disorder, then I can help to dissolve and loosen the mind from those thought disorders. And the fear behind that behavior, as the nested frequencies of fear are forgiven and removed, and that whole persona, that whole set of behaviors is going to disappear. That would be my offering.
He does understand that it's a thought disorder. And it's very interesting because his father's been going through a tremendous career crisis. And
right.
as an aside, Jonathan even joined Tim Hayes on his Zoom thing last night and said it helped him relax for the first time in a very long time. He felt encouraged.
Awesome.
He could sleep last night. He has had enough of a margin of healthy thinking now that he could think of ways to handle what he's going through, getting the help of people at the hospital, going through proper channels to get a proper leave of absence, take a sabbatical. It isn't just running away. Suddenly he's applying, and all of this was fruits from last night, but here we're talking about Charlie. Charlie's been witnessing this, and his OCD has been worse, but when he and I and his dad go for a walk, and his dad will be talking about things that are clearly thought disorders, Charlie knows it all. He'll say, "Dad, you know that's a thought disorder. You just ignore it. You put your mind onto something healthy. You know what they are." Charlie goes into his Michael Rice mode or Tim Hayes mode. He knows.
Michael Rice is your son, eh?
No, Charlie knows what's good for his dad. And then I say, "Charlie Warrell, are you listening to yourself? Because this is exactly what you should be doing, and you can do, and you are sometimes doing." And he retains the insight for a while. He'll say, "Yeah, you're right. I know that. But then he'll have a relapse.
So here's where the next level of healing is going to come for Charlie then, I think, from what you just said. Charlie holds a belief within his system of thought disorders that if he just focuses on something positive and everything will be okay, and he ignores that other. I say,
yeah.
No, had Charlie head headlong into that other and learn the nature of this disorder and forgive, remove it from your mind so that you can be free of it. There's no solution in ignoring it and going and doing something positive. That's just the premature positive thinking game, and it sets them up for problems. But
perhaps
pointing that, he's obviously a very bright young man. So pointing that out to him and letting him know that there is a tool, it doesn't, finish overnight. It's not finished with one shot. It's like anything else. If you want to, create a path in the jungle, you have to go through that path over and over and over. Hundreds of people or hundreds of times, you're going to have to walk that path and clear the brush and clear the grass and clear the wild animals, and then you're going to have a path to walk. So you're going to have to do the same thing with your unruly mind, just like the jungle. And so instead of ignoring them, here's what you do. Here's how you diffuse or forgive, remove the energy that's behind them until those thoughts have no impetus to move in him. And then he'll be free of them.
Right. Well, I love that, and I agree with that. Having Charlie do the worksheets is just beyond, there's some resistance, probably because I'm the grandmother, and what do I know, or I don't know what it is, but he won't do them. So, and Jonathan wouldn't really do them either, but he did do part of one the other day and then got too anxious. He said his brain fog was so bad that he couldn't even concentrate. So I shifted into a mind shifter for him. And he did a half a page of mind shifter things and got a good look at the thought disorders, all the crazy thinking. But he didn't finish that either. But yesterday, when I took the dog back home, I walk their dog twice a day, took the dog back home, I said, "You don't look so good," because he really looked pinched and in pain. He said, "I'll do anything." And I said, "All right, the best thing I can offer is a worksheet or a mind shifter, or Tim Hayes has a Zoom thing tonight, but you need to carve the time and not have anything else going on." Well, he was cooking dinner, so he said, "I can't do a mind shifter or a worksheet now, but maybe I can go on the Zoom." And I thought, well, we'll see. But he did. And he said today, as I told you, it was helpful. It just opened a little bit of a margin of air that he could breathe so he could begin to look
sweet.
At it. And I'm thinking, if Charlie sees his dad doing this sort of thing, maybe Charlie will get on board. But he is so enthralled with his thoughts, the need to solve the OCD thoughts he has, that it overrides everything. And so we sit sat in silence.
He may need to hear it 1,000 times that he can't solve them. You know, that's the old number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, if I could just figure this out. But letting him know that, you know, he doesn't need to solve them. He doesn't need to figure them out. All he needs to do is forgive them. And when they're removed from the structure, just like any other virus in a computer, when the virus is removed, it's gone. And, you know, maybe, you know, being of the generation he's in, maybe putting it in computer terms. You know, there's a virus in your mind, the thought disorder, just like a virus in a computer. What do? You go out and get the removal software, and you remove it. So here's the removal software. Here's how it works. And because, you know, Charlie, this may not have started with you. In fact, you watched Dad. It obviously was going on with him. And, you know, I had a little of that myself. And then I go back and I look at my mom and dad and their mom and dad and great, 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 great. You know, you're the inheritor of something that's got to be this a virus that's been going on for a long time, and you can dissolve it piece by piece. It's not going to be done one fell swoop. It's going to be done one worksheet, but you can do it, and here's Orb here to support you.
That's great. I love the translating into computer. That's good. Well,
he'll understand viruses and virus software, and he'll understand why you have to guard. You know, go back to the Greeks. This is one of the pieces of the whole game that the Greeks really had. The Greeks said, guard the portals of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got to guard his own mind against being attacked by his own mind. And so every time he comes across a thought disorder, and if he starts to think of it as a virus, then what's the virus tool look like, and how am I going to use it to remove this? And as he starts to remove it, they'll disappear. I mean, they will literally disappear, and he'll just be, you know, the natural kid he was designed to be.
That's good.
And who knows what the backlash will be to Dad and to you and to Tim and generations before and still, you know, here and functioning. Who knows what the impact will be? But it'll be profound.
Fantastic. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea, Michael. Well, it's been very intensive,
you know, perhaps,
out here.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, I think at the intensive I gave out bookmarks, and on the back of the bookmark there's a short form worksheet.
It's
on the website.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
Maybe forget the
Jonathan
longer worksheet,
said,
and that was both he and his dad.
Yeah, Jonathan said Tim Hayes used the short step worksheet with the patter detour. And
right.
Jonathan said it was very, very powerful.
Sweet.
So I'm going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, just take the short, you know, three steps or maybe four steps on the back of the bookmark. And or if I know Jeannie, she's probably already got the link in the notes for that worksheet and or that short form. And, you know, keep it simple. Keep it right down. You know, the simple explanation. And, you know, it took me, as I've said before, 35 years to understand that. Why would you do such a silly-ass thing as cancel a perfectly good goal? You know, this is a wonderful goal. Why would I cancel it? That's silly. Here's why. Because when you put it in your mind and your mind works by resonance, it resonates garbage. It needs to be cleared out. So this is canceling the goal is how to clear out the viruses.
All good, Michael. You did it again.
Well, we'll hold the
space. No matter how hard you try. Thanks.
Well,
space is good.
We'll hold the space for no matter what it brings up for you in offering the support and the processing work, that you can be one step ahead in processing yourself when issues come up that you haven't resolved that match the issues that they have.
Michael, I've been doing that. You will be proud. I get up and my meditation in the morning is at least one worksheet with the pattern, which means it's a very thorough worksheet. And
right.
I tell you, I would not have been able to be this well and feel this good if this had been happening even a year ago. And I'm not saying it's just great all the time, but it's manageable and, it's good. But I'm telling
you, one
weird thing I've been doing.
What's that?
I've been chewing the inside of my mouth by accident. I mean, I'll chew my salad, and I've chewed the side of my mouth to the point where it's so swollen that when I eat, I have to pull my teeth out. It's hard to avoid it, and I've been pulling my cheek out, and I called the dentist, and the woman was, she said, yeah, once you get that swollen, it's do smoothies, take it easy a few days, it should heal, and if it doesn't in a week, of course, come and see us. But I looked up on Google, you know, and I'm transferring now. Hang on, I'm transferring over to the car, to the regular phone.
Okay.
All right, the regular speaker.
Okay, just transferred over. All right.
That sounds good.
I went online. It says it's the result of stress. So I think, okay, I'm still that unconscious. And it's despite the work, that I'm doing weird physical things.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that's a weird physical thing. I mean, I don't know anybody that hasn't bitten their own lip with their own tongue. In fact, Arya did it yesterday. She bit her tongue. She's like, oh, I bit my tongue. It's like, that's not very nice, is it? And it's something that happens and swelling occurs. So take care of yourself. Instead of making it some mistake you made, it was just something that we've all done and all do from time to time.
Okay, that's good. Good.
Yeah, instead of making it some sort of a deficiency in behavior that you have.
Right.
It's like,
okay.
You gotta stop picking on yourself, young lady. Start acknowledging yourself for, you know, the awesome work that you've done in the last couple of years. I mean, it's just, it's profound.
It's been great. It's been great. It's a way of life. It's just, and Waldeck.
How about a mind shifter?
Waldeck, sure. Hang on. I just got home and I can get out a pen and write something down.
Perfect.
Okay, I'm ready.
I deeply cherish and honor myself. For the healing work.
Mm-hmm.
That I have done for my family and our generations.
And I'm supposed to argue against that?
No, no, you're not supposed to do anything. But that would be the first thing you'd put on the other side of the page. No, there's no argument. The idea of a mind shifter is you write that on the left side of the page, and then whatever your mind comes up with, like a thought, like, am I supposed to argue with that? Whatever comes.
All right.
There's no particular requirements. It's whatever comes. And then if you see that, with that, because the mind works by resonance, if you're uncovering thought disorders, then you've got all the rest of the tools to apply to change and remove those thought disorders.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's a good one. That's a very good one. Because I did a mind shifter on Jonathan, something like, it is safe and healing for me to be joyful and at peace when Jonathan is struggling with his issues. And I found out an awful lot of stuff about my codependent relationship with him, how I'm afraid I will be abandoning him if I'm peaceful and happy while he's unhappy, how he will feel abandoned. He might even be mad at me if I don't accompany him in this, in that way. He doesn't agree with any of that. I told him about that mind shifter. He said, oh, my God. I don't want you.
Why would I do such a thing to you, Mom?
Yeah. No. I don't want to have to worry about
it. I can just see him. Mom, are you crazy?
I know. I know, but
how do you think of me doing such things to you?
Yeah, it was like that. And so, you know, it's a hydra on a hydra. Every hydra tentacle has a hydra tentacle. So this has been.
I understand.
Now you gave me another one. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Oh, you're welcome. And deserving.
Hey, I have a question, which is a form of escape, but also I've been wondering about Jeannie, and I wanted to ask her if she's still piling on the hoarding on the inside. She's still piling on tasks for herself to be doing.
Of course. I do have the, since the apps are done, I'm working with the guy from India on my website to correct, because the apps weren't printing on it either. The worksheets weren't. And so he's helping me get that straightened out. And then I'm working with Susan on the main changes of the website. But I've actually kind of backed off of that just a little bit. And this morning I've been working on getting Dad goes back to the doctor Wednesday. So I'm working on making sure that all the ducks are in the row for getting him back. And he's had two physical therapists and occupational therapists and the nurse here this week. And all of them are so pleased with his improvements. And so that's awesome, because that means they'll keep coming. They were going to stop coming because they said if they couldn't prove, you know, that he was getting better with their assistance, then, you know, they couldn't keep coming because insurance wouldn't pay for it. So it looks that. Yeah. So because of the diagnosis of Parkinson's and the new med that they put him on, he's able to be more aware and follow direction better, and he's walking better. And so that's a definite positive, because I'll still have help coming in. Wow.
And he's gotten to a state where he's giving Jeannie more opportunities to learn forgiveness, too.
Yes, he is.
Oh, boy.
Been bringing up a few layers. And Jeannie has been more willing to take the time to just come in, put her hand in the house, and lay down and relax rather than have to go, go, go. So there's some light at the end of the tunnel, and things are moving sweetly.
Yeah. Jeannie, how has that affected your purpose sheet? I mean, your purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and, you know, I think we all have to watch on that, you know, because I am definitely on purpose in supporting family and, you know, taking care of Dad, taking care of Aria and Michael. And, you know, so my purpose is to support and to do, but I think we all have to watch, because then we cross the line. And I think you actually said it the other day, we sacrifice ourselves. And, you know, just like on the airplane, you have to put your mask on first. You got to take care of yourself, or you can't take care of the others. And so,
yeah, particularly I've been thinking about that book, which is yelling at you. Yeah, we don't need that, but I'm thinking about you wanting to do the book.
Yeah, I had hoped to be writing this week, and that has not happened. So hopefully, you know, we'll have baby Monday and Tuesday, and then we'll be off a week. So hopefully I'll get some writing done then.
Good.
Hold the space.
Yay.
Yeah.
I will.
All right, well, we're down to about the last 30 seconds. So we appreciate our conversations with you, young lady. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks so much.
All right, everybody. Everyone, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. We appreciate you. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.